The smell of industrial decay filled my nostrils as I crouched beside the corroded promethium pipe, running my fingers along its pitted surface. The metal felt cold and slick with condensation that had been dripping for Emperor knows how long. 3 levels down from our usual territory in the Rust Serpent's domain, the Underhive pressed around us like a tomb. The darkness here was different from the perpetual gloom above, thicker, more oppressive, as if the very air had weight. Kron's heavy breathing echoed behind me as he struggled with the portable Auspex scanner, its cracked screen casting sickly green light across his scarred face. The device had been salvaged from a dead guilder months ago, and its machine spirit was temperamental at best, but it was picking up something unusual ahead, power signatures that shouldn't exist this deep in the Hive's bowels. The maintenance tunnel stretched before us, its rockcrete walls bearing the accumulated grime of millennia. Ancient support beams groaned overhead, their metal surfaces bloomed with rust that flaked away at the slightest touch. Water dripped steadily from somewhere in the darkness, each drop echoing with hollow persistence. The promethium pipes we'd been following branched and twisted through the tunnel like arteries, some still carrying the faint vibration of distant machinery. Jace moved ahead with the practiced silence of someone who'd spent years avoiding enforcer patrols. His thin frame disappeared into the shadows between the pipes, reappearing moments later with a gesture that meant the path was clear. The low stick hanging from his lips had long since gone cold, but he kept it there out of habit. His augmetic eye whirred softly as it adjusted to the darkness, the red lens casting brief crimson glints on the tunnel walls. Thane brought up the rear, his massive frame barely fitting through some of the narrower passages. The former pit fighter carried our heaviest equipment without complaint, his shoulders bearing the weight of demo charges and cutting tools that would have staggered a lesser man. The ritual scars covering his arm seemed to writhe in the shifting shadows, and I could hear the soft clink of the bone fetishes woven into his hair. The tunnel began to slope downward more steeply, and I realized we were descending into sections of the Hive that predated the current architecture by centuries. The rockcrete here was different, older, denser, bearing the hallmarks of construction techniques that had been forgotten long before any of us were born. Embedded in the walls were fragments of metal and ceramic that didn't match anything I'd seen in the upper levels. As we descended, the temperature dropped noticeably. The oppressive heat that characterized the Underhive gave way to a chill that seemed to seep through our clothing and into our bones. The air grew cleaner too, losing the acrid bite of chemical pollutants and industrial waste. It was almost refreshing, though something about the change made my skin crawl. The promethium pipes we'd been following began to converge with others, creating a complex network that suggested this area had once been part of a major distribution hub. Some of the pipes were massive, easily large enough for a man to crawl through, while others were barely finger thick. All bore the patina of extreme age, their surfaces covered in a film of dust so fine it seemed to float in the air around them. Kron's Auspex began chirping more insistently, its readings fluctuating wildly as we moved deeper. The power signatures were growing stronger, more defined. Whatever lay ahead was substantial, not just residual energy from decaying equipment, but something that was still actively drawing power. The implications of finding functional technology this deep in the Underhive sent a thrill through my chest. Such discoveries could set a gang up for years, providing the kind of wealth that could buy territory, weapons, and respect. The tunnel opened into a wider chamber, and I paused to let my eyes adjust. The space was roughly circular, with multiple passages branching off in different directions. The ceiling arched high above us, disappearing into shadows that our lumens couldn't penetrate. Ancient drainage grates lined the floor, their metal surfaces worn smooth by the passage of time and countless footsteps. But it was the far wall that caught my attention. Rising from the chamber floor like a monument to forgotten purpose was a blast door of proportions that dwarfed anything I'd seen in the upper levels. The thing was easily 20 meters wide and half again as tall, its surface composed of layered adamantine plates that showed no signs of corrosion despite their obvious age. The metal had a peculiar sheen to it, as if it had been treated with some kind of protective coating that had lasted far longer than its creators had intended. At the center of the door, carved deep into the metal itself, was a symbol that made my breath catch. The cog wheel of the Adeptus Mechanicus, its 8 spokes radiating outward in perfect symmetry. But this wasn't the crude approximation of the holy symbol that adorned most imperial machinery. This was the real thing, precision carved by artisans who understood its true significance, its lines sharp and clean despite the millennia that had passed since its creation. Jace had already begun examining the door's edges, running his hands along the seams where the massive panels met. His augmetic eye cast its red glow across the surface, analyzing the construction with inhuman precision. The door was sealed tight, not just locked, but actually fused along its perimeter. Whatever lay beyond had been meant to stay hidden. The Auspex's readings were off the charts now, its machine spirit struggling to process the energy signatures emanating from beyond the barrier. Kron had given up trying to get coherent readings from the device, instead focusing on the various tools and equipment we'd brought with us. The plasma cutters we'd stolen from a Guilder supply convoy 3 months ago had been intended for breaking into rival gang strongholds, but they should be more than capable of breaching even adamantine plating. Thane had already begun unpacking the demo charges, his massive hands handling the volatile explosives with surprising delicacy. The charges were military grade, liberated from an enforcer armory during a raid that had cost us 2 good men. Each one contained enough explosive force to level a hab block, and we'd brought 6 of them. If the plasma cutters couldn't breach the door, the charges certainly would. The work began in earnest as we set up our equipment. The plasma cutters required careful calibration, their machine spirits coaxed into cooperation through the proper rituals and maintenance procedures. The devices hummed to life with a sound like angry insects, their cutting beams casting harsh blue, white light across the chamber walls. The light revealed details I hadn't noticed before, tool marks on the walls, scratches in the floor that suggested heavy machinery had once been moved through this space. As the cutters began their work on the door, I found myself studying the Mechanicus symbol more closely. The craftsmanship was extraordinary, each line and curve executed with a precision that spoke of true mastery. But there was something else, subtle variations in the metal's texture around the symbol that suggested it had been added after the door's initial construction. Whatever lay beyond this barrier, someone had wanted to make very clear that it belonged to the Adeptus Mechanicus. The cutting process was slow and methodical. Adamantine didn't yield easily, even to plasma cutters operating at maximum power. The beams carved through the metal with agonizing slowness, leaving behind molten channels that glowed like miniature suns. The heat was intense, forcing us to work in shifts to avoid overheating our equipment. The air filled with the acrid smell of vaporized metal and ozone. Hours passed as we worked, taking turns with the cutters, and gradually carving a rough circle large enough for a man to pass through. The demo charges were positioned at strategic points around the perimeter, their detonators synchronized to create a controlled explosion that would punch through the remaining metal without bringing the ceiling down on our heads. When the charges detonated, the sound was deafening in the confined space. The blast wave knocked us flat, and for several moments I could hear nothing but a high-pitched ringing in my ears. Smoke and debris filled the chamber, making it impossible to see more than a few meters in any direction. The air tasted of cordite and burned metal. As the smoke cleared, I saw that our work had been successful. The circular section of the door had been blown inward, leaving a jagged opening that revealed only darkness beyond. Cool air flowed through the breach, carrying with it scents that were completely foreign, clean metal, preserved plastics, and something else that I couldn't identify, but that made my mouth water with anticipation. Jace was the first through the opening, his slight frame allowing him to squeeze through the gap with ease. His augmetic eye cast its red glow into the space beyond, and I heard him make a sound of amazement that was quickly stifled. Kron followed, then Thane, and finally myself. The chamber beyond the blast door was a revelation. Where the tunnels outside had been crude and utilitarian, this space was a marvel of engineering precision. The walls were lined with panels of polished metal that reflected our lumens back at us in perfect clarity. The floor was composed of hexagonal tiles that fit together with such precision that the seams were barely visible. The ceiling arched high overhead, supported by graceful columns that seemed to have been grown rather than built. But it was the contents of the chamber that made my heart race with excitement. Arranged in neat rows throughout the space were dozens of stasis containers, their transparent surfaces revealing glimpses of the treasures within. Cogitators of obviously ancient design sat alongside power cells that still glowed with stored energy. Mechanical components of unknown purpose rested in protective foam, their surfaces unmarked by time or corrosion. The stasis fields were still active, their faint humming filling the chamber with a sound like distant music. Whatever power source maintained this place had been running for millennia, preserving its contents in perfect condition. The implications were staggering. This wasn't just a cache of salvage, but a repository of archaeotech that could revolutionize our understanding of Imperial technology. Kron's Auspex had given up entirely, its machine spirit overwhelmed by the sheer quantity of active technology in the chamber. The device simply displayed a solid wall of energy readings, its screen flickering with patterns that hurt to look at directly. But we didn't need the Auspex to tell us what we'd found. The evidence was all around us, intact technology from the Dark Age of Technology, preserved in perfect condition and waiting for someone with the knowledge to activate it. I moved deeper into the chamber, my eyes cataloging the treasures around me. Each stasis container held wonders that could have bought us a dozen territories in the upper hive, power cells that could run a factory for years, cogitators with processing power that exceeded anything in current Imperial use. Mechanical components whose purpose was mysterious, but whose construction was obviously superior to anything being produced in the current age. The chamber extended further than our lumens could penetrate, disappearing into shadows that seemed to swallow light itself. More stasis containers lined the walls, their contents glowing softly in the preserved atmosphere. The air here was clean and cool, filtered and recycled by systems that had been running since before the Imperium had reached its current state of decay. As I examined one of the closer containers, I noticed something that made my blood run cold. The stasis field was flickering, its steady hum interrupted by occasional stutters that suggested the power source was beginning to fail. Other containers showed similar signs of instability, their fields wavering like heat mirages. Whatever had preserved this place for millennia was finally beginning to break down. The realization spurred us into action. We had to work quickly, cataloging and extracting as much as possible before the stasis fields failed completely. The treasures here could set us up for life, but only if we could get them out before the preservation systems collapsed entirely. The weight of opportunity pressed down on us as we began the delicate work of accessing the containers and preparing their contents for transport. The moment Kron's boot crossed the threshold of the blast door, something fundamental changed in the chamber's atmosphere. A deep thrumming sound resonated through the floor, vibrating up through my bones and into my chest cavity. The sound wasn't mechanical, it was organic, alive, like the heartbeat of some massive creature buried deep within the hive's foundations. The stasis containers around us flickered more violently, their protective fields stuttering as power was suddenly diverted elsewhere. Red warning lumens burst to life along the chamber's walls, casting everything in a hellish crimson glow that made the shadows dance and writhe. The light revealed details I hadn't noticed before, scratches in the polished metal surfaces, gouges that looked disturbingly like claw marks. The hexagonal floor tiles beneath our feet began to glow with their own internal light, forming patterns that hurt to look at directly. Behind us, the blast door shuddered. The massive adamantine panels groaned under some tremendous force, metal screaming against metal as hidden mechanisms engaged. I spun around just in time to see additional barriers sliding down from concealed recesses in the ceiling, layer upon layer of reinforced plating that sealed the breach we'd so carefully cut. The sound of our escape route being eliminated was final and absolute, like the closing of a tomb. Thane rushed toward the door, his massive frame moving with surprising speed as he tried to reach the narrowing gap. His scarred hands clawed at the descending barriers, but the adamantine was already too thick, too heavy. The demo charges we'd used to breach the original door would barely scratch these new obstacles. The mechanical systems sealing us in operated with the inexorable patience of a machine that had waited millennia for this moment. The emergency lumens continued their crimson pulsing, and I realized they weren't just warning lights, they were part of some ancient security protocol. The chamber systems had detected our presence and responded according to programming that predated the current Imperium. We weren't just trapped, we were contained, like specimens in a laboratory awaiting examination. Jace moved through the stasis containers with nervous energy, his augmetic eye scanning the chamber's perimeter for any sign of another exit. The red lens cast its own light across surfaces that seemed to shift and change in the emergency illumination. What had appeared to be simple storage containers now revealed themselves as something far more complex. The transparent surfaces weren't just protective barriers, they were observation windows designed to allow monitoring of whatever lay within. The contents of the containers became clearer as my eyes adjusted to the red light. What I'd initially taken for Archaeotech components were revealed as something far more disturbing. Mechanical limbs twitched within their stasis fields, servo motors flexing with residual electrical impulses. Partial torsos showed the fusion of flesh and metal that characterized advanced servitor construction, but the organic components were wrong somehow, too hairy, too primitive, as if they'd been harvested from something that had never been human. Kron's auspex had begun functioning again, but its readings made no sense. The device showed life signs throughout the chamber, not the steady signatures of the stasis-preserved components, but active, moving contacts that seemed to be circulating through passages we couldn't see. The machine's spirit was clearly struggling to process what it was detecting, its screen flickering between impossible readings and complete static. The chittering sound started as a whisper, so faint I almost dismissed it as the settling of ancient machinery. But it grew stronger, more distinct, echoing from the ventilation grills set high in the chamber walls. The sound was organic, not the clicking of mechanical components, but the vocalization of something alive, something that had been waiting in the darkness beyond the stasis chamber, listening to our approach through sensors we couldn't detect. I moved closer to one of the ventilation grills, trying to pinpoint the source of the sound. The metal grating was old but well maintained, its surface free of the corrosion that plagued most underhive infrastructure. But caught in the spaces between the metal bars were tufts of coarse, dark fur, not the synthetic fibers used in imperial textiles, but organic hair that felt disturbingly warm to the touch. The fur was matted with something that might have been blood, though the red emergency lighting made it impossible to be certain. The strands were thick and wiry, like the pelt of some large predator, and they carried a musk that made my nostrils burn. Whatever had left these traces had passed through the ventilation system recently. The scent was too strong, too fresh to be ancient residue. As I examined the fur more closely, I noticed that some of the ventilation grills showed signs of damage. The metal bars had been bent outward, not by tools or explosives, but by something that had forced its way through from the inside. The edges of the damaged metal were scored with deep gouges that could only have been made by claws, not the mechanical talons of a servitor, but organic weapons honed by evolution and hunger. The stasis containers throughout the chamber were failing more rapidly now, their protective fields collapsing in sequence as the emergency protocols diverted power to other systems. The contents within began to move, twitching and writhing, as they were exposed to the chamber's atmosphere for the first time in millennia. But these weren't the random spasms of decaying machinery. The movements were purposeful, coordinated, as if whatever lay within was awakening from a long sleep. Thane had given up trying to force the sealed blast door and was now examining the chamber's walls for any sign of weakness. His massive hands ran along the polished metal surfaces, feeling for hidden panels or maintenance hatches that might provide an alternate route. The ritual scars on his arm seemed to pulse in the red light, and I could see the tension in his shoulders as he worked. The bone fetishes in his hair clicked softly as he moved, creating a counterpoint to the chittering sounds from the ventilation system. The emergency lumens revealed more details of the chamber's true nature as my eyes continued to adjust. This wasn't just a storage facility, it was a research laboratory, complete with surgical tables and monitoring equipment that had been hidden in the shadows. The tables were stained with substances that looked disturbingly organic, and restraints built into their surfaces suggested that whatever had been studied here hadn't been willing participants. Along the far wall, partially concealed by the failing stasis containers, I could make out what appeared to be a series of holding cells. The barriers were transparent aluminum, reinforced with adamantine mesh that had been designed to contain something far more dangerous than standard prisoners. The floors of the cells were covered with the same coarse fur I'd found in the ventilation grills, matted into nests that suggested long-term habitation. Jace had discovered something that made him freeze in place, his augmetic eye focusing on a section of wall that looked identical to all the others. But his enhanced vision had detected something my natural eyes couldn't, a hidden panel that had been seamlessly integrated into the chamber's construction. The panel was marked with symbols that weren't Imperial Gothic, but something far older and more primitive. The chittering from the ventilation system was growing louder, more insistent, and I realized it wasn't coming from just one source. The sounds were echoing from multiple grills throughout the chamber, suggesting that whatever was making them had spread through the facility's air circulation network. The pattern of the chittering was almost conversational, as if multiple entities were communicating with each other in a language that predated human speech. Kron's auspex was now showing definite movement signatures converging on our position. The contacts were moving through passages that didn't appear on any schematic we could access, following routes that seemed to bypass the chamber's main entrances entirely. The readings suggested that whatever was approaching was roughly human-sized, but moved with a gait that was distinctly non-human, too fluid, too predatory. The temperature in the chamber was dropping rapidly as the environmental systems struggled to maintain atmosphere in the face of the security lockdown. Our breath began to mist in the cooling air, and I could feel the chill seeping through my clothing. But the cold wasn't just uncomfortable, it carried with it the scent of something wild and feral, like the den of a large predator. The stasis containers nearest to us were now completely dark, their contents fully exposed to the chamber's atmosphere. What emerged from the failing preservation fields defied easy categorization. The creatures were roughly humanoid in shape, but their proportions were wrong, too long in the limbs, too broad in the chest, covered in the same coarse fur I'd found in the ventilation grills. Their faces were a nightmare fusion of human and animal features, with elongated jaws filled with teeth that belonged on a carnivore. But these weren't the creatures making the chittering sounds. These were specimens, preserved examples of something that had once been studied in this facility. The real threat was still moving through the ventilation system, approaching our position with the patience of a hunter that had waited millennia for prey to enter its domain. The hidden panel that Jace had discovered suddenly Iris opened, revealing a maintenance shaft that disappeared into darkness. The opening was just large enough for a human to crawl through, but the edges showed the same claw marks I'd seen on the ventilation grills. Whatever used this passage regularly had left its mark on the metal, scoring deep gouges that spoke of claws harder than steel. From the depths of the maintenance shaft came a sound that made my blood freeze, a low, rumbling growl that seemed to vibrate through the chamber's floor. It wasn't the mechanical growl of a servitor's voxcaster, but something organic and predatory. The sound was answered by similar growls from other hidden passages throughout the chamber, creating a chorus of hunger that surrounded us completely. The emergency lumens began to flicker more rapidly, their red light strobing in patterns that made the shadows seem to move independently. In the intermittent illumination, I caught glimpses of movement in the darkness beyond the stasis containers, shapes that moved with fluid grace through spaces that should have been too small to accommodate anything larger than maintenance servitors. Thane had found what appeared to be a service hatch near the chamber's far wall, but when he tried to activate its opening mechanism, the controls sparked and died. The security lockdown had disabled all non-essential systems, trapping us as effectively as if we'd been sealed in a tomb. The only active passages were the ones being used by whatever was hunting us through the facility's hidden networks. The growling was getting closer now, accompanied by the sound of claws scraping against metal as something large moved through the maintenance shafts. The chittering had evolved into something more complex, not just communication, but coordination. Whatever was approaching was working together, using the facility's infrastructure to surround us before moving in for the kill. The realization hit me like a physical blow. This entire chamber was a trap. The Archaeotech, the stasis containers, even the blast door itself had been bait, designed to lure salvagers and treasure hunters into a killing ground where they could be studied, dissected, and ultimately consumed. The Mechanicus hadn't just been conducting research here, they'd been feeding something, maintaining a population of predators that had been waiting in the darkness for fresh prey to stumble into their domain. The attack came without warning, erupting from the ventilation shaft directly above where Thane had been examining the sealed service hatch. One moment he was running his scarred hands along the metal surface, searching for any weakness in the emergency lockdown systems, and the next he was being dragged upward by something that moved with inhuman speed and precision. The creature that seized him was a nightmare of elongated limbs and matted fur, its body contorting through angles that should have been impossible for any living thing. Multiple joints in its arms and legs allowed it to fold and unfold like some grotesque mechanical contraption, but the wet sounds of sinew and muscle made it clear this was entirely organic. Its talons had punched through the ventilation grating as if it were tissue paper, the reinforced metal offering no more resistance than cloth. Thane's scream echoed through the chamber as he was pulled into the shaft, his massive frame disappearing into the darkness above with terrifying ease. The sound of his voice dopplered away through the facility's hidden passages, growing fainter but more desperate as whatever had taken him dragged him deeper into the infrastructure. The bone fetishes in his hair scattered across the chamber floor, clicking against the hexagonal tiles like dice cast by some malevolent force. The ventilation grating swung loose on its twisted hinges, revealing glimpses of the passage beyond. The shaft was larger than it had appeared from below, easily wide enough to accommodate something the size of a man. But the surfaces were scored with deep gouges that suggested regular use by creatures equipped with claws capable of carving through reinforced metal. Tufts of coarse fur clung to the jagged edges where the grating had been torn apart. I moved toward the damaged opening, trying to track the sounds of Thane's abduction, but the acoustics of the facility's infrastructure made it impossible to determine direction or distance. The chittering that had been growing steadily louder was now accompanied by wet, tearing sounds that made my stomach clench with dread. Whatever had taken him was already beginning its work. Kron had positioned himself near the center of the chamber, his auspex sweeping in wide arcs as he tried to track the movement signatures that were converging on our position. The device was picking up contacts throughout the facility's hidden network of passages, but the readings were erratic and contradictory. The creatures seemed to be moving through spaces that shouldn't exist, following routes that bypassed the facility's main infrastructure entirely. The emergency lumens continued their crimson pulsing, and in their intermittent light, I caught glimpses of movement in the shadows beyond the failing stasis containers. The shapes were quick and fluid, darting between cover with the practiced ease of predators that had hunted in these passages for millennia. They moved on two legs, but with a gait that was distinctly non-human, their elongated limbs allowing them to cover ground with disturbing efficiency. Jace had taken position near the hidden panel he'd discovered, his augmetic eye scanning the maintenance shaft for any sign of the creatures that had taken Thane. The red lens cast its glow into the passage, revealing surfaces that were slick with substances I didn't want to identify. The shaft extended beyond the range of his enhanced vision, disappearing into darkness that seemed to swallow light itself. The sounds from the ventilation system had changed, becoming more organized and purposeful. The chittering was now clearly communicative, with different tones and patterns that suggested a complex language. But underneath the vocalizations was something else, a wet, rhythmic sound that made my skin crawl. It was the sound of feeding, of something organic being systematically dismantled by creatures that understood anatomy with surgical precision. I forced myself to focus on our immediate situation rather than dwelling on what was happening to Thane somewhere in the facility's hidden depths. The chamber offered limited defensive positions, with the failing stasis containers providing only minimal cover. The creatures had demonstrated their ability to move through the infrastructure at will, meaning they could attack from any direction without warning. The temperature continued to drop as the environmental systems struggled with the security lockdown. The cold was becoming more than just uncomfortable, it was affecting our ability to move quickly and accurately. My fingers were growing numb, making it difficult to maintain a proper grip on my weapons. The creatures, however, seemed unaffected by the temperature change, suggesting they were adapted to the facility's deep-level environment. More ventilation grates throughout the chamber began to show signs of stress as unseen forces tested their integrity. The metal groaned and flexed under pressure from within, and I could hear the sound of claws scraping against the interior surfaces. The creatures were moving through the entire network, positioning themselves for a coordinated assault that would leave us no avenue of escape. Kron's auspex suddenly locked onto a strong signal moving through the passages directly above us. The contact was large and moving with purpose, following a route that would bring it to the maintenance shaft near Jace's position. The reading suggested something roughly human-sized, but with a density that indicated significantly more muscle mass than any normal person would possess. The wet sounds from the ventilation system had stopped, replaced by a silence that was somehow more disturbing than the feeding noises had been. The sudden quiet suggested that whatever had been consuming Thane had finished its work and was now ready to focus on the remaining prey. The chittering resumed, but with a different quality, more urgent, more excited, like predators that had tasted blood and were eager for more. I moved closer to Jace's position, trying to get a better view of the maintenance shaft he'd been monitoring. The passage was definitely large enough for the creatures to move through comfortably, and the claw marks on its surfaces suggested regular use. But there was something else, a faint airflow that indicated the shaft connected to other parts of the facility, possibly including areas that weren't subject to the security lockdown. The emergency lumens flickered more rapidly, their strobing light creating a disorienting effect that made it difficult to track movement in the chamber's periphery. In the intermittent illumination, I caught glimpses of shapes moving between the stasis containers, not the preserved specimens that had been stored here, but living creatures that moved with predatory grace through the facility they obviously knew intimately. Jace suddenly tensed, his augmetic eye focusing on something in the maintenance shaft that I couldn't see. His body language suggested immediate danger, and he began to back away from the opening with careful, deliberate movements. The red lens of his enhanced vision was tracking something that was approaching through the passage, something that moved with the fluid motion of a natural predator. The creature that emerged from the shaft was a nightmare fusion of human and animal characteristics, its body covered in the same coarse fur I'd found throughout the facility. Its limbs were elongated and multi-jointed, allowing it to move through the confined space with disturbing ease. The face was the worst part, recognizably human in basic structure, but distorted by predatory features that spoke of genetic modification or evolutionary adaptation. Its eyes reflected the emergency lighting like those of a nocturnal hunter, and its jaws were filled with teeth that belonged on a carnivore. The creature's hands ended in claws that were clearly organic but harder than steel, capable of carving through metal as easily as flesh. It moved with the confidence of something that had never encountered prey capable of effective resistance. Jace tried to retreat toward the chamber's center, but the creature was faster than any human could be. It flowed out of the maintenance shaft with liquid grace, its elongated limbs allowing it to cover the distance between them in a single bound. The attack was swift and brutal, with the creature's claws opening deep wounds that sprayed blood across the chamber's polished surfaces. The dismemberment was systematic and efficient, demonstrating an understanding of human anatomy that suggested intelligence behind the killing. The creature didn't just tear at its prey randomly, it targeted specific joints and pressure points with surgical precision, disabling resistance before moving on to more vital areas. The sounds of the attack echoed through the chamber, wet and organic and utterly final. Kron and I had taken cover behind one of the larger stasis containers, but the transparent aluminum offered little protection against creatures that could carve through reinforced metal. The Auspex readings showed more contacts moving through the facility's hidden passages, converging on our position with the coordinated precision of pack hunters. We were surrounded by predators that knew the terrain intimately and had been waiting for prey to enter their domain. The creature that had killed Jace was already moving toward our position, its movements fluid and predatory as it navigated between the chamber's obstacles. Its eyes remained fixed on us with the unwavering focus of a hunter that had identified its next target. The blood on its claws was still wet, and I could see fragments of fabric and flesh caught in the organic weapons. More creatures began emerging from hidden passages throughout the chamber, their appearance confirming my worst fears about the facility's true nature. These weren't random mutations or failed experiments, they were purpose-built predators, designed to hunt and kill with maximum efficiency. Their bodies showed the hallmarks of deliberate modification, with enhancements that made them perfectly suited for moving through the facility's infrastructure and eliminating any intruders. The pack hunting behavior was immediately apparent as the creatures began to coordinate their movements. They communicated through a combination of chittering vocalizations and subtle body language, positioning themselves to cut off any possible escape routes. Their intelligence was obvious in the way they worked together, demonstrating tactical awareness that rivaled trained military units. The facility's emergency systems continued to pulse their crimson warning, but the light now revealed the true horror of our situation. We were trapped in a killing ground that had been designed specifically for this purpose, surrounded by predators that had been waiting in the darkness for millennia. The Archaeotech and Stasis containers had been nothing more than bait, luring salvagers and treasure hunters into a trap from which there was no escape. The cogitator terminal flickered to life as Kron's scarred fingers worked across its corroded interface, the ancient machine's spirit responding grudgingly to his ministrations. The screen cast sickly green light across his face as lines of data scrolled past, most of it corrupted by millennia of neglect, but still readable enough to piece together the facility's horrific purpose. My heart sank as I read the fragmented records over his shoulder, the implications of what we'd discovered hitting me like a physical blow. The creatures hunting us weren't some random mutation or Xeno's infestation. They were failed experiments in creating enhanced human soldiers, the product of research that had been conducted in this facility during the early days of the Imperium. The data logs spoke of genetic modification programs, of attempts to create super soldiers by combining human DNA with genetic material harvested from predatory species. The experiments had been abandoned when the subjects proved impossible to control, their enhanced aggression and hunting instincts making them too dangerous for military deployment. The facility had been sealed not to contain valuable Archaeotech, but to prevent these creatures from escaping into the wider hive. The stasis containers we'd seen weren't preserving specimens for study. They were holding cells, designed to keep the failed experiments dormant until a permanent solution could be found. That solution had never come, and the creatures had eventually broken free of their containment, establishing themselves as the facility's new masters. The maintenance records showed that automated systems had been feeding the creatures for centuries, providing them with a steady supply of nutrients through the facility's waste processing network. But the systems were failing now, breaking down after millennia of operation without proper maintenance. The creatures were growing hungry, and our arrival had provided them with the first fresh meat they'd encountered in generations. Kron's Auspex suddenly screamed a proximity warning, its machine spirit detecting massive movement through the passages directly above us. The creatures had finished their coordination and were moving into position for a final assault. The readings showed at least a dozen contacts converging on our location, their movements synchronized with the precision of a military operation. These weren't mindless beasts, they were intelligent predators executing a carefully planned hunt. The emergency lumens throughout the chamber began to fail in sequence, their crimson light dimming as the facility's power grid struggled under the strain of the security lockdown. The darkness crept closer with each failing light, and I realized the creatures were systematically disabling the illumination to give themselves a tactical advantage. They could see perfectly in the dark, while we would be effectively blind without artificial lighting. I grabbed Kron's arm and pulled him away from the terminal, gesturing toward a maintenance hatch I'd spotted near the chamber's far wall. The opening was partially concealed behind a bank of failed stasis containers, but it appeared to lead to a service tunnel that might provide an escape route. The creatures seemed to be focusing their approach on the main chamber, which meant the maintenance areas might still be relatively clear. We moved between the stasis containers with desperate urgency, their transparent surfaces reflecting the dying emergency lights in fractured patterns that made navigation treacherous. The preserved specimens within watched us with dead eyes, their twisted forms a preview of what awaited us if the creatures caught us alive. The genetic modifications that had created these things were visible in every distorted feature, every elongated limb, and predatory enhancement. The maintenance hatch was secured with a simple mechanical lock, its design dating back to the facility's original construction. Kron's tools made quick work of the mechanism, and the heavy metal door swung open to reveal a narrow service tunnel that extended into darkness. The passage was barely wide enough for a man to crawl through, its walls lined with power conduits and data cables that hummed with residual energy. The tunnel sloped downward at a steep angle, following the facility's infrastructure toward what the terminal data had indicated was an emergency exit. The passage had been designed to allow maintenance personnel to evacuate the facility in case of containment breach, though the irony of using it to escape the very creatures it had been meant to protect against wasn't lost on me. We entered the tunnel just as the last of the emergency lumens died, plunging the chamber behind us into absolute darkness. The sound of our movement echoed through the confined space, and I could hear the creatures responding to our escape attempt. Their chittering filled the air above us, and the sound of claws scraping against metal indicated they were already moving through the facility's infrastructure to intercept us. The tunnel was a nightmare of confined spaces and sharp edges, its construction clearly prioritizing function over comfort. The power conduits generated enough heat to make the air stifling, and the constant vibration from the facility's failing systems made every surface treacherous. We crawled forward on hands and knees, our lumens casting weak pools of light that barely penetrated the oppressive darkness ahead. Behind us, the sounds of pursuit were growing closer. The creatures had found our entry point and were following us through the maintenance network with the fluid grace of predators perfectly adapted to this environment. Their movements were almost silent, marked only by the occasional scrape of claws against metal and the soft chittering of their communications. The tunnel began to branch, offering multiple routes deeper into the facility's infrastructure. Kron consulted his auspects, trying to determine which path would lead us to the emergency exit, but the device's readings were confused by the electromagnetic interference from the surrounding power systems. We were navigating blind through a maze that the creatures knew intimately. I chose the left branch based on nothing more than instinct, leading us deeper into the facility's bowels. The tunnel here was older, its construction showing the wear of millennia. The walls were scored with claw marks that suggested regular use by the creatures, and tufts of coarse fur clung to the rough surfaces where they had passed. We were following a route that had been used by our hunters for generations. The passage opened into a larger maintenance chamber, its ceiling high enough for us to stand upright for the first time since entering the tunnel. The space was filled with massive machinery that had once regulated the facility's environmental systems, but most of it was now dark and silent. Only a few status lights still functioned, casting eerie shadows across the chamber's industrial landscape. Kron immediately began examining the machinery, searching for any indication of the emergency exit's location. The equipment was of obviously ancient design, its construction showing the superior craftsmanship of the facility's original builders. But years of neglect had taken their toll, and many of the systems showed signs of imminent failure. The sound of movement in the tunnel behind us indicated that our pursuers had reached the branching point. The chittering grew more excited as they detected our scent trail, and I could hear them spreading out to cover multiple routes. They were herding us toward a specific destination, using their knowledge of the facility's layout to funnel us into a killing ground of their choosing. A heavy stubber mounted on a maintenance gantry caught my attention, its barrel still gleaming despite the facility's overall decay. The weapon appeared to be part of the facility's original security systems, positioned to provide covering fire for maintenance personnel during emergency evacuations. The ammunition hopper was still half full, and the weapon's machine spirit responded to my touch with a low hum of activation. Kron had found what appeared to be a control panel for the emergency exit systems, but the interface was locked behind security protocols that required administrative access. The terminal displayed warnings about containment breach and unauthorized personnel, its machine spirit refusing to acknowledge our presence. The emergency systems had been designed to prevent the creatures from escaping, but they were also preventing us from leaving. The first creature emerged from the tunnel entrance just as Kron began his attempt to bypass the security locks. The thing moved with predatory grace across the chamber's industrial landscape, its elongated limbs allowing it to navigate the machinery with disturbing ease. Its eyes reflected the few remaining status lights, and its jaws were already open in anticipation of the kill. I opened fire with the heavy stubber, the weapon's roar echoing through the chamber as mass reactive rounds tore into the creature's torso. The impact staggered it but didn't bring it down, its enhanced physiology allowing it to absorb damage that would have killed a normal human instantly. Dark blood sprayed across the machinery, but the creature kept coming with single-minded determination. More creatures began emerging from the tunnel, their numbers confirming my worst fears about the scope of the facility's population. They moved with coordinated precision, using the chamber's machinery as cover while they positioned themselves for a coordinated assault. Their intelligence was obvious in the way they worked together, demonstrating tactical awareness that made them far more dangerous than simple predators. The heavy stubber's ammunition was depleting rapidly, and I realized that even with the weapon's superior firepower, we were hopelessly outnumbered. The creatures were adapting to our tactics, learning from each exchange of fire and adjusting their approach accordingly. They had the patience of hunters that had waited millennia for prey, and they were in no hurry to end the chase. Kron's work on the control panel was interrupted by a creature that had flanked our position, moving through the machinery with the silence of a natural predator. The thing launched itself at him with claws extended, but he managed to roll aside at the last moment. The creature's talons carved deep gouges in the metal floor where he had been standing, sparks flying from severed power cables. The emergency exit remained sealed, its massive blast doors refusing to respond to Kron's increasingly desperate attempts at bypassing the security systems. The facility's machine spirits had been programmed to contain the creatures at all costs, and they were treating us as potential vectors for escape. We were trapped between the facility's security protocols and the predators they had been designed to contain. The creatures were closing in from all directions now, their movements coordinated through the chittering communications that filled the chamber. They had abandoned stealth in favor of overwhelming force, confident that their numbers and superior adaptation to the environment would ensure victory. The hunt was entering its final phase, and we were running out of options. Kron suddenly looked up from the control panel, his face grim with realization. The emergency exit could be opened, but only by manually activating the system from a control station located deeper in the facility. The route would take us through areas that the creatures had claimed as their territory, past chambers where they had been breeding and feeding for generations. It was a path that offered only the slimmest chance of survival. The heavy stubber's ammunition finally ran dry, its barrel glowing red hot from sustained fire. The creatures had learned to avoid its arc of fire, using the chamber's machinery to approach from angles where the weapon couldn't target them effectively. They were displaying the tactical intelligence of trained soldiers, adapting their strategy to counter our defensive measures. I abandoned the useless weapon and moved toward Kron's position, trying to reach him before the creatures could complete their encirclement. The chamber's industrial landscape provided some cover, but the creatures' enhanced agility allowed them to navigate obstacles that would have stopped normal humans. They flowed through the machinery like liquid death, their movements perfectly adapted to the facility's environment. The control panel finally responded to Kron's ministrations, its screen displaying a schematic of the facility's emergency systems. The manual activation point was located 3 levels down, in a section of the facility that the terminal data had identified as the primary breeding area. The creatures had chosen their most secure territory as the location for their nursery, and we would have to pass through it to reach our only hope of escape. The creatures were almost upon us now, their chittering reaching a fever pitch as they prepared for the final assault. Their eyes reflected the terminal's glow like stars in the darkness, and their claws scraped against metal as they positioned themselves for the kill. The hunt that had begun in the stasis chamber was about to reach its bloody conclusion in this maintenance chamber deep beneath the hive. The secondary exit loomed ahead through the industrial gloom, its blast doors sealed with the same adamantine plating that had trapped us in the stasis chamber. But as I approached the massive barrier, my heart sank into my boots. The emergency lighting revealed what lay beyond through a series of reinforced viewing ports, not the tunnel to freedom I had desperately hoped for, but a vast pit that dropped away into darkness so complete it seemed to swallow the light itself. The pit was enormous, easily 100 meters across and extending down further than my lumen could penetrate, but it was the contents that made my blood turn to ice water in my veins. The entire chasm was filled with bones, thousands upon thousands of human skeletons piled in drifts that reached nearly to the rim. The remains showed clear signs of violent death, with skulls crushed by powerful jaws and ribcages torn open by claws that had sought the soft organs within. These weren't recent kills. The bones were old, some so ancient they had taken on the yellow patina of extreme age. Layers upon layers of skeletal remains told the story of centuries of hunting, of countless salvagers and treasure hunters who had been lured into this facility by the promise of Archaeotech wealth. The creatures had been feeding on intruders for generations, and this pit served as their charnel house, the final resting place for everyone who had been foolish enough to breach the sealed laboratory. I could see the remnants of equipment scattered among the bones, power tools, weapons, even the occasional piece of carapace armor that had failed to protect its wearer. The metal showed the same claw marks I had seen throughout the facility, scored and torn by creatures that possessed the strength to rend adamantine with their bare hands. Every piece of salvage gear told the story of someone who had died screaming in the darkness, their dreams of wealth transformed into nightmare. The viewing ports were reinforced with layers of transparent aluminum, but even through the thick barriers I could smell the decay that rose from the pit. The stench was overwhelming, not just the odor of death, but something deeper and more primal. It was the smell of a predator's den, of a place where living things came to die and be consumed. The creatures had been using this pit as their primary feeding ground, dragging their prey here to be systematically dismantled and devoured. Behind me, the chittering of the approaching creatures had changed in tone and complexity. What had been simple hunting calls were now elaborate vocalizations that carried the cadence of actual speech. The sounds were still alien and disturbing, but I could detect patterns that suggested meaning, communication that went beyond mere animal instinct. The creatures were talking to each other, and their voices carried an intelligence that made my skin crawl. The first clear words came as a shock that nearly drove me to my knees. The voice was distorted by an elongated jaw and predatory dental structure, but the language was recognizable as Low Gothic, the common tongue of the Imperium. The creature speaking was somewhere in the darkness behind me, its words carrying across the maintenance chamber with the confidence of something that had no fear of being overheard. It spoke of hunger, of the long years of waiting in the darkness, while the facility's automated systems had provided only synthetic nutrients. The voice described the taste of fresh meat, the satisfaction of warm blood flowing over teeth that had been designed for tearing flesh. But beneath the predatory hunger was something else, a loneliness so profound it was almost human in its intensity. More voices joined the first, creating a chorus of distorted Gothic that revealed the true horror of what these creatures had become. They weren't just failed experiments or genetic aberrations, they retained fragments of human consciousness, memories of what they had been before the modifications had transformed them into monsters. They spoke of the facility's original purpose, of the scientists who had created them, and then abandoned them when the experiments had gone wrong. The creatures described their imprisonment in the stasis containers, the endless sleep that had been meant to last until a solution could be found for their condition. They had awakened to find themselves alone in a sealed facility, their creators long dead and their purpose forgotten. The automated systems had kept them alive, but they had been trapped in an existence that was neither fully human nor completely animal. Their words revealed the systematic nature of their hunting, the way they had learned to use the facility's infrastructure to their advantage. They had been deliberately herding me toward this location, just as they had done with countless others over the centuries. The pit wasn't just a feeding ground, it was a trap designed to funnel prey into a location where escape was impossible. The creatures spoke of the others who had come before me, describing their deaths with a clinical detachment that was somehow more disturbing than outright sadism. They remembered each group of intruders, cataloging their equipment and tactics with the precision of military analysts. The knowledge they had gained from previous hunts had made them increasingly effective predators, each encounter teaching them new ways to kill and consume. But it was their description of the facility's true nature that filled me with the deepest dread. This hadn't been a research laboratory or storage facility, it had been a prison, designed to contain creatures that the Imperium had deemed too dangerous to exist. The Archaeotech and stasis containers had been nothing more than camouflage, a false front designed to conceal the facility's real purpose from anyone who might accidentally discover it. The creatures had been created as weapons, enhanced humans, designed to serve as shock troops in conflicts that required something more than normal soldiers could provide. But their modifications had gone beyond simple physical enhancement, altering their neural structure in ways that had made them uncontrollable. They had retained human intelligence while gaining predatory instincts that made them incapable of functioning in civilized society. Their voices carried the pain of beings that remembered being human but could no longer suppress their need to hunt and kill. They spoke of dreams that haunted their sleep, memories of lives they had lived before the modifications had transformed them into monsters. The loneliness in their words was genuine, the product of centuries of isolation in a facility that had become their prison and their kingdom. The creatures were approaching now, their movements no longer concealed by stealth or misdirection. They had revealed themselves because they knew the hunt was over, that I had been successfully herded into their killing ground with no possibility of escape. The pit before me represented the end of every story that had begun with someone breaching the facility's sealed entrance. I could see them now in the emergency lighting, their forms more clearly defined than they had been in the stasis chamber. The genetic modifications were visible in every aspect of their physiology, elongated limbs that provided enhanced reach and leverage, reinforced skeletal structure that could absorb impacts that would shatter normal human bones, and sensory organs that had been enhanced to provide superior night vision and hearing. But it was their faces that revealed the true tragedy of their existence. Beneath the predatory features and elongated jaws, traces of human expression remained. Their eyes held intelligence and awareness, the capacity for thought and emotion that separated them from simple beasts. They were prisoners of their own enhanced biology, trapped in bodies that demanded violence while retaining minds that could remember what it meant to be human. The lead creature approached the viewing ports, its claws scraping against the transparent aluminum as it gestured toward the pit below. Its voice carried a mixture of hunger and regret as it described what would happen next, the systematic dismantling that would reduce me to component parts suitable for consumption. The process had been refined over centuries of practice, and they took a craftsman's pride in their efficiency. But there was something else in their words, a deeper purpose that went beyond simple predation. They spoke of the facility's continuing function, of their role as guardians of secrets that the Imperium had tried to bury. Every person who entered the facility became part of their purpose, joining the bones in the pit as evidence of the price paid for knowledge that was too dangerous to possess. The creatures described the gradual corruption that would claim anyone who remained in the facility too long, the way the environment itself would slowly erode sanity and humanity. They had seen it happen to maintenance personnel who had been trapped during the original containment breach, watching as isolation and the facility's influence had transformed them into something that was no longer entirely human. My Vox caster crackled to life as I activated the emergency beacon, sending out a final transmission that would serve as my epitaph. The signal would reach the upper levels of the hive, alerting other gangs to the existence of the facility and the treasures it supposedly contained. The creatures listened to my transmission with amusement, knowing that my final act would only serve to bring them more prey. The blast doors of the secondary exit began to iris open, revealing the full scope of the pit and its grisly contents. The creatures had activated the mechanism not to provide escape, but to complete the trap. The opening would allow them to dispose of my remains in the traditional manner, adding my bones to the collection that served as testament to their efficiency as hunters. The facility systems were already beginning to work on my mind, the same corruption that had claimed so many others starting to take hold. I could feel my thoughts becoming disjointed, my perception of reality shifting in ways that made it difficult to distinguish between memory and hallucination. The environment itself was designed to break down mental barriers, preparing victims for the transformation that would make them part of the facility's eternal cycle. The creatures spoke of the others who had joined them over the centuries, maintenance personnel and security guards who had been trapped during the original containment breach. The isolation and the facility's influence had slowly eroded their humanity, transforming them into something that was neither fully human nor completely monster. They had become guardians of the facility's secrets, protectors of knowledge that was too dangerous to be released into the wider Imperium. My final Vox log transmission cut to static as the facility's systems completed their work, the signal dying as my equipment was overwhelmed by electromagnetic interference. The creatures moved closer, their voices becoming a chorus of welcome as they prepared to induct me into their eternal brotherhood. The pit yawned before me, its depths filled with the remains of everyone who had sought to claim the facility's treasures.